Hello and welcome to another week of KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch here with Mark Hazlett and Taylor Phelps. We're going to discuss quite a lot this week, including what has to happen for soccer to become a major sport in the United States, who's on your Mount Rushmore of sports, and then we're going to talk, of course, NBA playoffs, maybe talk a little NHL playoffs, and then finish off today's segment with the Rangers. And we may or may not be back for later this week, the Thursday or Friday program, whichever one we do, because Ryan Billups is getting married on Friday, and I'm in his wedding party, so we've got a lot of stuff to do Thursday and Friday. So we'll see what happens, but we definitely want to be here, so just stay tuned to the website and see what happens. Anyways, guys, let's get to the first topic of the show. What do you think has to happen for soccer, or football as it's called everywhere else, to become a major sport in the United States?
Take it, Mark.
Sure. Well, I think it's on its way to becoming a major sport, and I'm not certain how long that's going to take. But I do think it is going to become a major sport. The only question is when. It could take decades, or it could be a major sport as quickly as about 10 years or so.
Right.
There's already parts of the country where it's more popular than hockey, for example. I think in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I would still say that the Dallas Stars probably are a more popular team than FC Dallas. Having home games at the American Airlines Center certainly helps, and having won a Stanley Cup back in 99 also helps.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting dynamic here is the way that the overall Hispanicization of the United States affects the popularity of soccer, because, of course, it's more popular in Hispanic communities, but you can't just automatically assume that today's, you know, some Hispanic kid who's 10 years old is going to be a huge soccer fan 10 years from now when he's 20, because, you know, in a lot of cases, there's kind of a generational breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Where maybe his older relatives who are more, have stronger ties to Mexico or whatever their historical country of origin might be really into soccer, whereas the kids, their tastes are more influenced by their peers than their family, and they're into NFL and NBA and baseball just like all the other kids at school. So that'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. I think as far as short term goes, the MLS needs to continue to do well, particularly in major markets. They're doing pretty well in Los Angeles, with one of the two teams there being very successful. It would help them if they would do better in New York. I understand that they do have plans for a second New York team.
Okay.
Although that it remains to be seen how well that'll go, because there seem to be some venue questions as far as that goes. But the MLS needs to continue to do well. They are pretty good for the most part as far as being fan-friendly, but there are some things that they really need to solve as far as their media presence. For example, if you have the MLS app for your smartphone, you don't have an option for game audio.
Okay.
Which is really a drawback. You know how it is with NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, those applications for mobile devices. You can get game audio, you know, it's pretty cheap, you know, something like $15 for the season, something like that. And then you have a much more expensive option where you get game video for your hardcore fans who can afford to shell out $80 or whatever it is to get the video for all the season. And the reason MLS doesn't offer game audio as an option is because not all MLS teams have their games on the radio.
Okay.
And that's pretty sorry for a league that wants to be a major league. So they have to fill in the gaps as far as their PR presence goes with things like that. And if they continue to improve that, I think that it will be a major sport at some point.
I kind of agree with Mark on the time frame is kind of up there in the air, and we don't really know whether it'll be a decade, whether it'll be 20 or 30 years. But I do think it's coming. I think just the international game in general of all sports is really out there. We see the NFL trying to go to London and really expand their horizon too. I think a major reason it's not as popular in the U.S. is kids grow up playing it, but they stop in high school.
Right.
To gain in popularity, it's going to have to gain with the younger population, and all schools need it, like a basketball or a football. Every school in Texas nearly plays football. Almost, yeah. I don't think there's a school in Texas that does not play basketball. But yeah. We look at soccer. You really have your 3A, 4A, 5As are the only ones that have teams, and not all of them have teams. So we've seen it gain in popularity with women just because they don't have as many sporting options. But if we want our better athletes to play soccer, we're going to have to see it expand that way also. Now, as far as the major league game, the scoring has always been an issue, and not having enough scoring. We need major players here too. Most of our better players are going over to Europe to play, and I'm one of them that follows the Barclays Premier League instead of the MLS just because it's hard to follow. It would be like being an NBA fan. I follow the NBA because they're the best players in the world. I don't follow Spanish leagues or German leagues or right. other leagues across the world. But we definitely need a change in the players' personnel in the MLS also.
Right. What do you think is the first big stepping stone for soccer becoming popular? Like, is it winning a World Cup as
the US? Oh, that would
be
definitely huge. If we could even get in a final, or if we could get in a top four or something like that in the World Cup, that would definitely be big.
Okay.
That's pretty big. I think it's pretty unlikely, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's, at least in the near future.
Yeah, in the near future, it's awfully unlikely. I think that it would help if we had some superstars over here, but at the same time, you don't want to overstate that because the LA Galaxy picking up Beckham.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was noteworthy, and granted, he was already kind of on the backside of his career, but it's not like that made any huge difference in the popularity of soccer in the United States. I mean, back in the 1970s, with the old NASL, of which the Dallas Tornado were a team in that league, and they picked up the player who was the best player in the world at that time, Pele. Mm-hmm. And there was some attention given to it, but it was very much like Beckham's presence on the LA Galaxy. It's just, in the end, it wasn't that big a deal. And similarly, when George Best came over from the Premier League, and granted, unfortunately, he was already well into his decline at that point, but George Best came over from the Premier League and played in the NASL, and it really wasn't that big a deal. So I think it's going to be more than just a couple of superstars. I think it's going to have to be cities just really getting on board with their local MLS team. So
yeah,
I don't
definitely
know what that's going to take.
Now you're a big hockey guy, Mark. Does hockey, how do they do their scoring at the end? Did they go to penalty shootouts every game now, or
they have a 5-minute sudden death overtime, and then it goes to the penalty shot, which lots of hockey fans don't like it. I as a hockey fan, I don't like it because to me that's like deciding a ball game by having a home run contest or something. It's kind of ridiculous. But the thing is that our culture in the United States, our sports culture, hates ties. And it's a non-negotiable issue with most U.S. sports fans. Mm-hmm. It doesn't bother me because I grew up a hockey fan and liking soccer as well. So, but I understand that most U.S. sports fans, a tie just seems like an absurdity. And for sports like hockey or soccer, where the scoring's low and it's difficult to determine a winner, sometimes you just gotta compromise and do what you need to do.
And that's one thing I like you said, to the hockey or soccer purist, it kind of interferes with the game and the original way the game is played to have a tie. But I do think in the United States that could maybe affect viewing and popularity, as if we had winners and losers every game.
Yeah,
definitely. I agree. Yeah,
I think that really gets into people when they're like, they get a point for tying, or you know, like that happens in all the different leagues.
They don't really care about the full season.
Yeah,
as you see with like even the Spurs can have a great season as a team, but they don't really care how the regular season is. They care about superstars and scoring, and
they care about championships.
Yes, for sure.
That's all they really care about here. Well, let's move on to our other topic of the day. Who is on your Mount Rushmore of sports?
Ooh, and that's a tough one. So, well, I think the easiest is definitely Michael Jordan. Just his dominance in his game. He's pretty much the one player in a sport that you can say, well, he's the greatest player ever. I'd probably put, in hockey, I'd probably put Wayne Gretzky or Bobby Orr up there, either one of those. Babe Ruth would be up there. And it's tough in football because we've had so many great players that it's hard to put one above the other and say that they're the greatest of all time. So I think I'd go, man, I don't know. Football's a tough one.
Football really is the toughest one.
Yeah, because do you put a quarterback? Do you put a defensive player? Do you put a receiver? It's kind of the tricky one.
Right.
So I'm going to let y'all go, and I'll think about my last
one. Okay, well, how about this? What if we just made it the four best athletes that contributed the most to any sport? It doesn't have to be like four
the
different
four
sports.
Four best
even.
Athletes, okay. Yeah, definitely. Well, then I'd keep saying Michael Jordan. Probably go Wayne Gretzky. Probably go Babe Ruth. And if I had to go with someone else, man, it's still tricky.
Yeah.
You could argue Michael Phelps as far as an Olympian and what he's meant to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people that could go up there.
Yeah, there certainly are. If Phelps is in the discussion, then I would dust off the history books and say maybe Jim Thorpe.
Oh, definitely,
it's,
yes.
It's hard for us to measure how good an athlete he was just because of the competition that he faced when, you know, it's all we really have to go by is his Olympic performance. As far as his performance in team sports and things like that, it's really hard for us to say. I think that the choices in hockey and basketball are fairly obvious. I would, my contribution to this would to have my four from baseball,
okay,
which actually would not include Babe Ruth. I would have my four from baseball be Hank Aaron and Willie Mays and Walter Johnson and Satchel Paige, to have the two position players and two pitchers.
Yeah,
I think Willie Mays is the best all-around ball player who ever lived, and Hank Aaron, he might not have excelled in a historic level at anything except home run hitting, but because fans love that so much, and also because I think it's unfair that he doesn't have the record anymore, I would put him up there. And then for the two pitchers, Walter Johnson and Satchel Paige, I think are the two best pitchers in baseball history, so I'd have to put them there as well.
Right. I think for me, it's going to have to be Wayne Gretzky and Michael Jordan. I think everyone puts them up there for a general sports thing. And then I'm going to have to go probably, I think, just because I like him so much myself, Nolan Ryan's up there for me. And
yes,
then I think my fourth player has to be Bo Jackson, because he was so good, not at one sport, but at a bunch
of sports.
It's
really a disgrace that his career ended so shortly, because
yeah,
it's kind of what would have been, what could have been as a baseball player and a football player,
yeah,
just kind of in the peak of his career.
And it, not only was he like a good athlete, he was a great marketability, like all those old Nike commercials where he's like, Bo can do this.
Oh,
Bo,
yes.
Can do this. And it's a lot of fun to watch those and just see how cool of a guy he was. And Nolan Ryan claims that he saved his life in that famous Ventura duel when Ventura charged the mound. Nolan Ryan, I was at a lunch meeting in Greenville where Nolan Ryan was speaking. And of course, that question was brought up, like, what happened in that duel on the mound? And he's like, well, at the end of it, I got crushed by under all these people. I had 30 people on top of me, and I was losing my breath and passing out. And the next thing I know, Bo Jackson's just pulling me out just by himself. And so he always really loved Bo Jackson, and I thought that was a really cool story. So I think mine have to be Michael Jordan, Wayne Gretzky, Bo Jackson, and Nolan Ryan. And across individual sports, I think that's a much harder discussion, because you get into position players, who deserves to be there.
Definitely.
But I think a fun thing to do now is to do a modern sports Mount Rushmore. Not like all time,
like,
but just
past
do like
10 years.
Past 10 years even. Like, what do you think is on there then?
That becomes a lot trickier with basketball.
Right.
Because then you can say Kobe Bryant or LeBron. LeBron doesn't have the championship, so I'd probably go with Kobe just as a whole career, because that's when his career has really developed his last 10 years. We go to football, you could probably put Tom Brady up there. Just his dominance and winning championships, like we talked about earlier, championships are what really matters here. I think you definitely put Michael Phelps on there then.
Okay.
Dominance in the last three Olympics, or not dominance in the last three Olympics, but the last two dominance, and he's competed in the last three. Other than that, it's really hard again when you talk baseball. You can maybe put Barry Bonds in there, surpassing, I know that's very controversial, surpassing the home run total, but you could maybe put him up there. There's just a lot of different people in baseball that it kind of makes it hard. That's why Mark even said you kind of got to have your own Mount Rushmore for baseball with different positions and pitchers and the position players also.
What about you, Mark? What's your, for the last 10 years?
Oh, for the last 10 years, I'd be pretty, I've been paying so much attention to either news or the sports that I had to cover for my job. So I could tell you a lot more about sports in the Texas Panhandle than I could about national sports. So I'm going to have to defer on that one.
Okay.
About all I would suggest is that if there's anything that this discussion has showed me, it's just how difficult it is to evaluate NFL players.
Yeah.
Just because their contributions are so different depending on what position. For example, we just lost a guy who pioneered the defensive end position. Deacon Jones passed away in the last 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, even coming up with a defensive Mount Rushmore would be
very difficult.
Yeah. Although I would have to say he'd have to be up there. I mean, he invented the term sack to refer to a quarterback tackle. So that that pretty much that kind of clues you in. He's the only defensive end that I would rank above our own Harvey Martin here.
Okay.
At old ET.
I think for me, the last 10 years would have to be Kobe Bryant or LeBron James is up there for sure. And I think for baseball, I'd have to say Randy Johnson. I think pitching-wise, he's contributed so much to the sport. I'm going to have to say in football, Brett Favre. Brett Favre he's got the records and all these things, including bad records of interceptions and things like that. So he's just been all over the sport.
Yeah, and good call with Randy Johnson, because you got to, in addition to everything else, you got to remember that he was pitching during the absolute heart of the performance-enhancing drugs era.
Yeah.
So there's no telling what his numbers would have been if he had been throwing, during the time that Ryan was pitching.
Yeah. And I think my last player would have to be, just because what they've done for the marketability of hockey the last 10 years, either Crosby or Ovechkin. I think, because they've saved the sport just because they're so marketable.
I would probably say Ovechkin over Crosby, mm-hmm. just because with Crosby's injuries.
Yeah, he has been out a lot.
Ovechkin's been more, and he's kind of taken that role, mm-hmm. Whereas like 5 years ago I might have said Crosby, but now I'd probably go Ovechkin.
All right, well, that's going to do it for the first segment today, and then we will be back after a short break and talk NBA playoffs. This is KETR's Locker Room.
I'm David Elbaz, host of Latin Soul. Join me on Tuesday night for a journey through Latin jazz, bossa nova, flamenco, and much more. Latin Soul, Tuesday night at 9, following Natalie Texan on KETR.
This weekend, we're throwing a party.
I want to hear Bob Dylan and Jesse the Body Ventura jump out of a birthday cake in their underwear and sing Forever Young to her.
With a few crusty characters.
You're a low-down, no-good, dirty, cheating, flim-flam, peon, pissant, and poltroon.
One radio private eye.
Oh, you must be Guy Noir.
Yeah, how did you know that?
Your visitor's badge.
All right, sure.
Join us, won't you?
A Prairie Home Companion. Saturday and Sunday afternoons at 5 on your station, 88.9 KETR.
All right, we're back on KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch and Taylor Phelps here. Mark had to go do the news, so we'll let him go do his normal paid job. Taylor, let's talk NBA playoffs. There's a lot going on. We're headed to the finals. Finally got the matchup.
Finally got
it there. Heat versus Spurs, and it seems like it's taken forever to get here.
Seems like it's taken forever to get where we thought we'd be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So now the first game of the finals is going to happen on Thursday, June 6th at 8 p.m. on ABC. So first, let's talk just your prediction for that game. What do you think is going to happen game one?
I think game one, the Spurs take it. Their experience, they're going to have a great scouting report. As I saw Eric Spoelstra say last night, he hasn't watched 1 minute of film on the Spurs, which he shouldn't have, as he needed to focus on the series at hand and a tough fought series it was against the Indiana Pacers in seven games. But I do think the Spurs will come out well rested with a great game plan, and they'll take it from the Spurs in game one and take it from the Heat in game one, excuse me. But like you said, we said the other day, it could go either way. It could either be the Spurs are not up to speed with the rest, or they could be well rested and come out, you know, on all cylinders firing. So I think we're just going to see in game one what's really going to happen. It's not going to be till the first 5 minutes of the game. I think we see that.
Right. What do you think is game one going to be the tempo setter, and is going to be the thing that defines the series, or do you think game one's just kind of a toss up and the rest of the series will be decided by whatever happens, home field advantage, whatever?
I feel like the inevitable is the Spurs win one of the first two games, and then from then on the series will begin. I think that now obviously the Spurs are going to win the first two games, or if the Heat are winning the first two games, that's going to change the dynamic of the series. But I do think the first two games will be a split. I see it kind of being the same way as Indiana. I see the Spurs like taking game one and the Heat taking game two because they lost. They get refocused.
Yeah.
They'll definitely be coming off a tiring game. That's a very physical game against the Pacers, very physical series. And it's not going to get any easier with the Spurs and the way they play. So I definitely see those two games splitting. The key games are the next three at San Antonio.
Right.
No team has ever won the middle three games. So San Antonio definitely has to win two there and then, you know, vie for the last spot in those final two games, whether it's six or seven.
Right.
But it's definitely, and we never talk about the format enough of the NBA Finals. It's definitely a disadvantage and a challenge with the way the format is, because having those middle three games at your home court is just kind of burdensome for you to have to say, oh, we have to win games at home. The whole playoffs you have been focusing on, we got to win our home games, and we'll steal them on the road. To win three games in a row, I don't care where you're at, that's very difficult to do against the same team.
Yeah.
So it really is a disadvantage, I think, to that middle team, whereas the team with the best record in the finals gets to play two games at their home court, which is definitely doable. It's definitely easy enough to win two games at home. And then automatically your back's against the wall, knowing we got to win three games at our home court for the Spurs if it ends up being that way. But definitely the format change is a difficulty they'll face.
Yeah. Now, do you think if someone, either team, wins the first two games, do you think that's going to be like set it up for a sweep or five games, or do you think that won't really matter?
I think if the Spurs are to win the first two games, I think they could definitely win it in five.
Okay.
I don't think they'll sweep. I think the Heat are too good to be swept. LeBron's too good to be swept. I don't think that will happen. And you know the Spurs are going to have one bad game.
Yeah, they always
do. It happens every playoffs, and the Heat are going to have one bad game. That's just going to happen.
Yeah.
But definitely, if the Spurs were to win the first two games, I feel like the Heat team will feel a little deflated. Not as much as someone else, like not as much as a younger team. But that's sports. You're going to feel a little bit deflated. You lose two games in a row. So I definitely see like the Heat winning game three and then the Spurs winning the next two games. But as far as we talk about, let's talk a little bit about matchups and
okay, go ahead.
And how these teams need to play each other to win. I'll take the side of the Heat and say for the Heat to win, it's all going to be about speed. And we've talked about this before as we've watched the games. They just have such a physical and athletic advantage over the Spurs. Now, the Spurs have athletic players, don't get me wrong. But the age of the Spurs, as we talk about every playoffs for the past, seems like the past 4 or 5 years, we've talked about their age ever since they won their last championship.
Yeah.
It's always been in the discussion. But they've played with such, they're just feel like an enlightened team, like they've got it back. Like all of a sudden, all of them are 5 years younger. But also, the Heat are even that extra step. They're above and beyond what a normal athlete would be. As you have LeBron James, and you got, you know, players like even Norris Cole, Mario Chalmers are explosive. But the main thing is LeBron James. Definitely, we'll see that be their advantage if they can exploit that and use their speed against the slower Spurs.
Right. I think for the Spurs to win, the Spurs are going to have to, as we talked about with Indiana, not double-team LeBron. You don't want to put two defenders or three defenders on LeBron because he's going to score his points no matter what, or pass to someone else because he's a great defender, great passer. I think the way the Spurs win is by making LeBron do it all himself.
Yes.
And make him shoot way more than he has, because we saw in the games that Indiana won, James was shooting probably 10, 20 more shots than he was when the Heat were winning, and his efficiency went way down. He scored the exact same amount, even though he was shooting more. So I think for the Spurs to win, they make LeBron do it all and make him less efficient. Now, they're going to have a great defender on him at all times, whether it's Kawhi Leonard or Danny Green.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest matchup is going to be Ginobili and Parker guarding against Dwayne Wade, and then Chris Bosh being limited by Tiago Splitter and Tim Duncan in the post.
And let's not forget that Pop has played against LeBron in a finals. Not played against him, but coached against his opposing team when LeBron was in Cleveland, and that was a four-game sweep. Now, obviously, LeBron's team's a lot better now, and LeBron's a lot better player now.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have strategy. He does know how to beat LeBron and the Heat, and that's one way to do it, is to make him do it all and kind of eliminate his help.
Well, how about this? This is going to be the first game since March of 2011 that both Big Threes have been completely healthy when they faced each other. Now, they've played each other five or six times since that March 2011 game, but they haven't had all three people of each
Ginobili,
team healthy.
Ginobili, Parker, Tim Duncan,
or
Bosh, Wade, and LeBron.
So it'll be interesting, I think, that first game, just to see what happens, to see which Big Three is really coming to play. And it's going to be interesting because the Spurs' Big Three has been healthy most of the playoffs. Ginobili hasn't been shooting as well as he should, but otherwise they've been healthy. And we've seen huge problems with Wade and Bosh, knee injuries for Wade and ankle injuries for Bosh. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
A big key, I think, that we need to focus on also is Tim Duncan's play. Just what we saw Roy Hibbert was able to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think Tim Duncan will be able to be Roy Hibbert as far as his offensive rebounding ability and his putbacks and his blocks. But if he can be that intimidator in the middle, as we saw Roy Hibbert be, and not let as many layups go through, then that can be a huge difference in the game, just to not let the short little layups. But the good thing I know about the Spurs is, and we talked about this last night also as we're watching Indiana play the Heat, Indiana was killing themselves on turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Spurs are going to turn the ball over at the same clip as Indiana. Not nearly the same at all.
Yeah.
I think the Indiana had 9 turnovers in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And that's unacceptable. Hopefully, the Spurs can do well enough if they have less than 9 turnovers in the whole half. That would be a good half for them.
Yeah.
It would be a tragedy to see Popovich go nuts if the Spurs had 9 turnovers in the first quarter.
Yeah.
But I definitely think those are two things that are going to matter a lot, is Tim Duncan's presence in the paint and the Spurs' ability to not turn the ball over.
Right.
Is definitely going to affect the series.
I think the key to this entire series, honestly, is going to be the play of Tiago Splitter. I think if he plays well, even if he scores just 10 points a game, gets 5 rebounds, if he sits there and keeps Bosh from being effective at all, I think the Spurs can win the series. I think he is the key.
So, Cooper, what do you think about LeBron just being able to dominate this series the way he's been able to dominate Indiana series?
Right.
Do you think that same thing can happen, or do you think that Kawhi is a better defender, or Danny Green's a better defender
than
Paul George will be as effective?
That's a good question. I think Kawhi Leonard is just as good as Paul George. I don't know if he's better. And I think Danny Green's just as good too. But I don't think that's going to stop LeBron. I think LeBron's going to score his 28, 29 points a game no matter what, because this has been by far his most efficient season as a player. I think the thing that'll determine it is whether or not Popovich can get in LeBron's head and get him to start shooting that outside jumper instead of going straight to the paint. Like that's been the huge thing about his efficiency going up. Is his first 3 or 4 years in the league, all he did was shoot the jumpers and shoot the jumpers. And now he goes in and just you know, pulverizes the paint, gets in, tackles anyone that's in his way. You're going to get, you're going to foul him or you're going to get him mad. And they're going to have to get Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green to piss him off so he's out there shooting jumpers, trying to do everything.
You
on
definitely
the outside.
Have to affect him mentally with physical play. And he's such a physical player. But if you match him with the same physicality, he usually will back down a little bit. One, because he doesn't want to get in foul trouble. I'm not going to say LeBron's not a physical player or a tough player.
I wouldn't want to
But obviously, he doesn't want to get in foul trouble. And we kind of saw that with Roy Hibbert, just his ability to go straight up. His ability to go straight up and not foul LeBron. It did get in his head a little bit because he is used to getting those foul calls.
Yeah.
But another question is, we saw last night Dwayne Wade played very well or played much better than he has. Do you think that he's back? Do you think that that was just a one-game thing? Or? Right.
Yeah, I don't know because he's had one other 20-point game in the playoffs, and they easily won that game. So I don't know. I don't know if – because Dwayne Wade has been so inconsistent this entire year.
Definitely.
Really, since – LeBron came in, I think. I think it's changed it not being his team anymore, and he's not the go-to guy. And so he doesn't really know, even now, how to deal with that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. I do think that he's going to come back and score and be a better player than he was in the Pacers series, but I don't think he's going to score more than 15 points a game.
Okay.
I don't see it happening, especially against a defensive team like the Spurs.
Yeah.
Well, let's make predictions for the series. I know we're about out of time, so let's make predictions and go on to the next part of the series, of the segment today.
All right. I would have said differently had, say, the Heat swept Indiana, obviously. I mean, they would have been playing a lot better. Mm-hmm. But I do think I'm going to take Spurs in six, and it really is tough to go against Miami to me because just they're so good, and you see so much potential. But the way they're playing now and coming off such a physical battle as they did in against Indiana, I'm going to pick the Spurs in six.
Right. I'd have to say Spurs in seven. But if the Spurs win game one and two, Spurs in five. I think that's the hinge right there is if they win one or two games.
So you say they win. You say in that first two games, if they win both of them five, if they only win one, it will go to seven.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk NHL playoffs real quick. Mark was telling us a lot during the break what all is going on there. So we know that Chicago is up 2-0 on LA right now, and Boston is up 2-0 over Pittsburgh. I caught a tiny bit of that game, the Boston-Pittsburgh game, and Boston destroyed Pittsburgh. They won, I think, 6-1.
Chicago and Boston are both dominating those series right now. And as Mark was saying earlier, it'll be the first time that two teams that kind of started the NHL in Chicago and Boston will be meeting up in the Stanley Cup final.
And that's, I mean, we're still speculating, but they're both up 2-0 on two really good teams.
And like we said, dominating those games. Yeah. So we definitely can speculate with a high percentage that it will end up being Chicago and Boston in the finals.
And I think that's great for hockey. I think because they're two teams with a lot of history, a lot of recent
big markets,
and a lot of recent playoff wins too. And I think that'll be a really compelling series to watch. I may break away from the NBA finals, especially if the Heat are winning a lot, and watch a little bit of hockey action this year. I haven't really done that the last few seasons. But it'll be a good series no matter what happens.
I agree. It'll definitely be a good series and exciting for both those because Boston just won a Stanley Cup not too long ago.
And Chicago won last year or 2 years ago, something like that.
And Chicago had that big winning streak this year too, didn't they? So that's definitely a lot. There's a lot of momentum behind those teams in the city and support from the city, which there's always been, but it's even magnified now with the success.
Yeah. Well, let's finish off the day just with some Rangers talk. They're facing the Boston Red Sox tonight at 6:10 p.m. Justin Graham, who is 5-3 with a 3.93 ERA, will be facing Dempster, who played for us last year, and Dempster has a 2-6 record with a 4.45 ERA. So, who do you got tonight?
The Red Sox have been playing really well, and I just think it's probably going to end up being the Red Sox. But that'll be a good, definitely a good matchup between the Rangers and the Red Sox. They've both been playing well, so it's hard to. That's a tough game to pick.
Yeah, I think the Rangers will continue their recent streak against the Red Sox and win at least two out of the next three in this series.
Now the Red Sox did come off a very late. Delayed game too with the Yankees.
Yeah.
As many rain delays throughout that game. I think it ended in the sixth inning with the Red Sox winning. But that could, and the baseball players are obviously used to so much travel and late nights, but that could definitely come into play tonight.
Yeah. I think the Red Sox lose to the Rangers tonight, just barely, maybe like a 4-3 game. We'll see what happens though. But other things about the Rangers, they are 6-4 in the last 10 games, including taking 2 of 3 from the Royals. And a big talking point right now is when Ian Kinsler does come back, it looks like it's going to be around June 15th now. Do you want to see Jerks and Profar sent back to the minors and facing like regular pitching day after day, especially in AAA level? Or do you want them to stay at the majors level and play, say, 3 out of every 10 games, take one game each from Adrian Beltre, Ian Kinsler, and Elvis Andrews?
I would like to see him stay just because he's such a great young prospect, and he's been playing really well, and there's a lot of fan support behind him right now.
Yeah,
you know, it's just that it's that guy off the bench. It's the backup quarterback. It's everybody cheers for him. They want him to see him do well.
Right.
And there's a lot of momentum behind him right now. His career is kind of taking off. I think you send him back down to the minors, even though, you know, as a management standpoint, this is not a bad thing. I think as a player, you kind of take that as, well, how am I ever going to get my shot if I'm playing this well and sending me back down?
Yeah.
You know, I want my chance. Leave me up there. And I think he can really help out the team, like you said, and he can give guys rest. He can give guys a break, and they can stick him in there at different times. And who knows? You might come playoff. Maybe the Rangers make the playoffs. He might come playoff time, and you need him.
Yeah.
You need a guy like that.
Yeah, that's definitely
because
true.
Because someone gets hurt, just like Ian Kinsler's hurt right now. You never know when someone's going to get hurt.
Right.
And that experience can really help him and really help the Rangers.
Well, I was listening to one of the ESPN Dallas shows yesterday. I don't remember which one it was, but they were talking about the same topic. And they thought that it'd probably be better for Profar if he stayed up here and got a lot of major league experience. But they thought the big problem was going to be convincing Adrian Beltre and Elvis
Definitely.
Andrews.
That's a problem. And, you know, you got a problem here. It's not, it's an unavoidable problem.
Yeah.
And
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah,
though.
It's a great problem. It's like 49ers when they have two great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They have Alex Smith and they have, what's his name?
Kaepernick.
They have two great quarterbacks. What are we going to do? Well, better than having no great quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But the same thing here. Who do you convince, and do you want a young player to kind of be disappointed that's a great prospect, or do you want to kind of sit down a more veteran player, someone who's had more experience, and be like, listen, this is why we need this to happen. We want to be the best team we can be, and it's not about the individual. It's about the team and the success of the team, and that's definitely something that could help the Rangers with Profar, with the club, and not in the minors.
Well, one last question. Do you see Profar in his career ending the same way that Kaepernick's did? Like Kaepernick becoming the starter and the other position player getting traded to someone else?
It's a lot different in baseball because you have so many.
Right,
have so many. But, this has been a thing across all sports. We were just talking last night about George Hill and Tony Parker being on the same team, and who do you keep and who do you get rid of because you don't need two guys.
Or now Danny Granger and Paul George on
Danny
the same
Granger,
team.
Paul George, Kaepernick, and Alex Smith, just like we talked about. Even when you had Peyton Manning and you were drafting a quarterback and Andrew Luck, it was, do we keep the old guy or, you know, what do we trade this draft pick? It's a real tough decision, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
I think I could definitely see them keeping Profar
and trading someone else.
And trading someone else just because it's hard to pass up young talent. When you have a young guy and you're like, well, we can build around him, it's a lot harder to keep the old guy and let the young guy go because their career hasn't blossomed yet, and you might have someone who you've seen his best years. So I definitely, while I don't think that's the case with the Rangers, while I don't think we've seen all those guys' best years, I definitely think the young prospect who's been playing very well is definitely a better decision from a management standpoint than keeping an older guy who is a promising player, but we don't know exactly where he's going to go, and we have so much more room for improvement for the other guy.
Right. I think what's going to happen probably in what's the ideal situation is you convince Kinsler or Profar or Andrews to go play the outfield, because right now that's our weakest position on the field.
And that's your best. That's your best bet. Now, yeah. That's another problem. Can't we convince one of them to? Your probably best bet is going to be to convince Profar to, just as a younger player, you know, this is your chance. You can go play outfield and
you can play every day.
You can play every day.
Yeah.
So that's definitely their best bet. But the problem is, you know, you never know the egos of these guys. Yeah. We only see one side of them. So definitely that's going to be something to be discussed behind closed doors.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll probably be back Thursday. I'm not absolutely sure what the schedule is going to say, but we'd hope to be back Thursday. And if not, we'll see you next week. This has been KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch.
And I'm Taylor Phelps.
All right. See you later.